Welcome to the Seahawkers Podcast with your host, Adam Emmert.
I'm so sick of the travel narrative. You sit in a chair in the sky for like, you know, half a day. The miracle of flight. It's not exactly difficult.
And Brandon Schultz.
He's at that Skip Bayless level of media attention. So it's not like us talking about him gives him any more of a platform than he already has.
Go Hawks!
On a quest to own the West, yippee-ki-yay, we make the ground shake, on game day, 12 men, yay, feeling it is vital, the Seahawks.
This is the Seahawkers Podcast. I'm Brandon Schultz of the Military Seahawkers, and joining me, my good buddy and Montana Seahawker, Adam Emmert.
Howdy, howdy, Brandon. You know the most interesting man in the world? You know those commercials?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like the most conflicted man in the world today.
Yeah.
I don't know if you feel the same, but an interesting game this last game. I can't even call it good, but I obviously can't call it bad either, man. I don't know. I don't know how you're feeling, dude, but I think as a fan base, as 12s, this may be the most conflicted I've ever felt.
Well, and that really leads to our first two topics of the show. It's that one, the Seahawks put the nail in the coffin of the Panthers season and did it in an emphatic fashion.
Eat it. Eat it, Carolina.
But it comes at a cost of losing Earl Thomas out for the season. And that's where the conflict comes from.
It does. It does. But apparently my joy for the Panthers being done and burying them, that's hard to contain.
Yeah, that's hard. It is.
It really is. I was trying to explain it to a friend who's not into football at all, why that was so satisfying. And I think she got it when it was all said and done.
You were able to explain yourself. Well, sure it'll come out in this show. The other couple things we'll be talking about, the Seahawks hit the road to Lambeau this week. And I think we need to talk about the Holmgren curse, Adam.
Ooh,
it's something we haven't talked about before.
Do not be inventing curses for our team. We have the curse of the Northwest already.
I'm not inventing
already.
It. This is a real thing. We'll
the
talk
South
about
Alaskan
it.
Curse. Okay. All right.
And a Marshawn Lynch sighting this weekend on the Seahawks sideline takes us on a trip to Prisco's world, Adam.
Oh, man. Well, fire up the spaceship then. I'm excited for that to visit Prisco's world. I have a feeling I'll disagree.
Patrick Seahawk Duncan will also be joining us on the show today. He was fun to talk to, and he was featured on the Tackle My Ride show on NFL Network. And so we'll hear from him on what that experience was about and talk about what's going on with the Kitsap Seahawkers.
Yeah, yeah. Good conversation. Oh, the one thing that after that conversation that worries me, remember when Discovery Channel used to show like animals and stuff, and like you get to see like the world and like something sciencey, maybe a documentary. Remember that? Remember when Discovery Channel had programming like that?
I thought it's always been like Real Housewives. No, I'm thinking of the
Learning
Channel.
No, it's like Pawn Stars now, and like it's just reality show after reality show. If this is the start of NFL Network starting to go down that path,
ooh,
I'm getting worried.
That could be bad.
Yeah, this is their only one that they can do. Like this show and no mas.
Well, Adam, let's talk about this Carolina game in the last six quarters. This makes me happy. In the last six quarters against the Panthers, Adam, the Seahawks have outscored them 64-7. Obviously, the last two quarters in the playoff game, getting 24 points to Carolina zero. And then they only put up 7 points against the Seahawks on this Sunday.
And 100% of the stats that you've brought up on this show have been cherry picked. I know that. I know that for sure.
64-7. Just it's a nice number.
The last four feel good. I know that much. Okay. I'm with you on that. But yeah, I mean, really, once the Seahawks have found their groove against this team, they've kind of throttled them.
Well, and it kicked off right from the start of the game, and with an interception to Mike Morgan.
Stewart from Lacy with a tight trips to the right side. Anderson is on the quarterback, starts at quarterback, and it's picked off by Mike Morgan on the far side of the field, down inside the 10-yard line. Anderson started. Derek Anderson was the quarterback. He rolled to the right side. Ball was tipped and caught by Mike Morgan, the outside linebacker, who just returned to the starting lineup. It bounced off the hands of Mike Tolbert, the fullback. And just like that, the Seahawks are in business inside the Carolina 10.
My favorite part about that clip is that Steve Rabel on 17 ESPN, it barely gets out of his mouth that Derek Anderson's starting a quarterback instead of Cam Newton. Barely gets that out of his mouth, and he throws a pick.
Yeah, he had to kind of like continue it through the call to Anderson, Derek Anderson throughout the call. But Mike Moe, welcome back, my friend. What a great way to come back. One of those guys that has worked his way up through the ranks on this team, a lot like Deshaun Shedd. One of those guys that's been with Pete Carroll forever, basically since he was recruited from high school. And one of those kind of unsung guys. And to see him work his way back after being injured for the majority of this season and to come back in that manner, that's very fitting. He's one of those character guys on the Seahawks. So good to see. And it was fun to start the game that way.
Carroll said that was his first interception of his career. What a great time to get it.
Well, he hasn't played a ton of defense, really. I mean, he's played a lot of special teams.
Filled in here and there. It surprised me for as much time as he's, you know, had filled in spot duty that he's never just come up with a pick. But that one landed right in his arms. It was great.
Yeah, that was gift wrapped. Basically, Tolbert not able to bring it in. I mean, that pick was not on Derek Anderson.
No.
So you kind of, once you see that happen, you kind of know what sort of day you're in for, you know, when it's just the first play of the game like that. And really, the Seahawks never took their foot off the gas from that point forward and just buried Carolina.
You know, another welcome back moment, it was in Mike Bennett lined up offside on, you know, like, what was it, the second play of the game for the Panthers?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, that line of scrimmage still mysterious. I don't know. Maybe he watches too much Star Trek and he's confused what the neutral zone actually is. Like, I don't know, because it's just he struggles with it. But the thing is if we give up a few of those, because that's how he gets his extra burst to get to the quarterback and be as disruptive as he is, I guess I'll live with it. But, you know, hey, man, I mean, I like that he's consistent about it. At least I know what I'm getting. I know what I'm getting. I'm getting at least two times Mike Bennett can't look at lines on the field and understand where he's over it or behind it.
Yeah.
But then, you know, probably 10 great plays.
Yeah, because there was another one that I thought the officials could have called and they didn't. But so I appreciate them letting us slip on that.
Right. Officials not a factor in this game really at all.
No,
when you think about it.
And there were a lot of concerns that it would be, because this crew apparently had thrown the most flags of any officiating crew for teams in the, you know, in the secondary. So with the Seahawks physical secondary, you kind of had to worry a little bit, but no, not a factor at all.
And that's one of the reasons why when people look into, oh, who's going to be calling the game? Like, it's one of those things that I really do not put much stock into.
Yeah.
It's one of those things that I have a hard time thinking is going to be a difference making thing. I think most of these officiating crews come in trying to be as objective as they can. I really do. I don't feel like they have an agenda. I mean, there's some games where it seems like it all goes against you. I don't think it comes from a place of, I don't know, unfairness, but I also don't know that those tendencies really translate week to week, because it could just be that a lot of those teams when they played were committing a lot of those penalties.
Right. And another thing is the Seahawks going into this game knowing that the crew tended to call a lot of those, they may dial it back a little bit too, and maybe not be quite as physical as they usually would, because they know the crew and they prepare for games, you know, depending on who's calling the game too.
Sure.
They know that stuff.
I mean, these officials even called an offensive pass interference against Carolina. At one point.
Yeah. And Carroll got pretty fired up thinking that they were going to call it on Sherm. And then you saw the smile on his face when he found out that it was offensive.
Looked like Pete Carroll was having a fun time this game. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. And let's get the unfun stuff out of the way, because I feel like
we've been dancing around it. Yes.
The moment that I kind of thought the momentum was starting to go back Carolina's way was when Earl went down, and immediately after they go deep to Ted Ginn and get the touchdown. But I wanted to read
you
this.
Get a completion that takes him to the one?
Well, it should have been a completion to the one, but right. You know, apparently the
eye in the sky did lie.
Yeah.
Cause that wasn't a touchdown, man.
No, it was not judging by the photos that we saw after the game, but you know, I guess maybe that's where they balanced out the no call on the Mike Bennett other neutral zone infraction. But Tim Connolly, I think, in Glendale explains this well. He says, well, We won. I wish I could feel better about putting a beatdown on the Panthers after the way we got knocked out of the playoffs by them last season. But hearing the news about Earl Thomas being out indefinitely, and word came out afterward that he's going to be out for the season, took a lot of the joy out of tonight's victory. I've seen a lot of similar plays this year where two defenders go for a pick and collide into each other, but this time it finally resulted in someone getting hurt. Seeing the tweet that he posted where he brought up the possibility of retirement sent a chill down my spine. Of course, he joked a minute later about Cam owing a mistake for crashing into him like that. My reaction,
catfish,
that Cam owes him a tire cow for doing that. I would like to ask you guys if either of you read the conversation that Bill Simmons and Malcolm Gladwell had on The Ringer about the future of the NFL. Although they talked more about the head injuries than anything else, it does seem like injuries are becoming a bigger and bigger factor each year. And the Seahawks have fallen victim to this problem as much as any other team in the league. They brought up some ideas to deal with the injury problem. For example, doing away with the preseason, adding more practices during training camp, and even having a weight limit for certain position groups. I wonder what the two of you think about those ideas and if you have some ideas of your own to both make the game a little safer and maybe speed up the game so they don't take 3.5 hours to play. Thanks again for putting the show together. And of course, go Hawks.
Yeah, go Hawks, Tim. He did put that well. I don't know. You're just not going to make this game completely safe. I think that's probably the number one thing that I take away from that. I did read that conversation between Gladwell and Bill Simmons, and I thought it was a good article for sure. But things like this, I don't know that you can regulate out of the game. I don't think there's a way to regulate weight limits or size limits on a player. I mean, that could turn into like 1,000 discrimination lawsuits, you know, like that's not going to work, but it's tough with this Earl injury. Cause it does feel like this team is a little snake bitten this year. I mean, the injuries have come in bunches.
Yeah.
And it just seems like it's a revolving door of injuries and more so than ever. And I guess maybe Brandon, what I've wondered as I was thinking about this with the Earl injury is with all these guys getting into their now late 20s, I mean, are we starting to see age become a factor with this roster? And you see more and more injuries as a result.
Well, I think with Cam Chancellor and Earl Thomas, the way those guys are so physical in the way they hit, and even Richard Sherman to an extent, because you don't see corners make tackles the way Richard Sherman does. And he's just one of the more physical guys that you see. So it is a concern. And but it's also the price you pay for having a really, 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 really good defense, like historically really good.
Yeah. To be in the conversation of leading the league in defensive scoring for now going on the fifth straight year. I mean, only the Browns back in the 50s did that. And if you don't know, those Browns teams with, you know, Otto Graham and Paul Brown as the coach. And I mean, holy smokes, those were some juggernauts. So to be in the same conversation as that, yeah, that is absolutely greatness. But
yeah, let's go back to Earl because, this is, I mean, this is the big unknown. We haven't had to see this team in a long stretch without him. And it's such a big part of what makes this defense great, right?
It really is. And like you said, the first game that he's ever missed was the Tampa game. And the defense actually performed in that game, holding Tampa to 14 points once they kind of got their poop in a group a little bit there. But basically, it is a big unknown, and he is a linchpin back there. I mean, we talked about it a little earlier, Brandon, the idea of which Seahawks are indispensable. Which guys can we not lose to make a Super Bowl run? And Earl felt like he's one of them because we all know Seahawks defense is predicated on playing cover three or cover one, and that all has a single high safety way back in the backfield covering up all of the big plays. Basically, His job was basically to sit back there, read the quarterback, read the routes, and prevent anything from getting over his head. And he has the speed to do that. And then on top of that, being a very intense, instinctual, well-studied football player, he could make breaks even a little earlier. I mean, there's a reason why he looks so fast. It's because the separation is in the preparation. I mean, the guys that are mentally quick out there, they're the ones that look even physically quicker. And so that is a concern. It's going to be tough. I mean, I don't know what to think this defense is going to be like. I think what you can expect is a couple more big plays here or there, maybe 5 more points a game on average given up. You know, that might be your difference. I think it's survivable, mainly because I think the offense can pull their weight here finally. But I don't know, man. How do you feel about the defense going forward? Is this something that you feel like this isn't something that you can come back from? Or are you feeling like, hey, I think we can weather this storm. There's enough leadership on this team to make it.
I lean more toward the latter. And it was interesting because I listening to Dave Damashek, he has the Jenga theory, right? Of the one one piece of the right. tower that you can pull out before everything comes down. And I got to thinking about that. And is Earl Thomas kind of that guy for the Seahawks defense? Mm-hmm. And my first instinct is to say yes, because he does do things that are so important. Danny Kelly of the Ringer and formerly of Field Goals came out with he tweeted about how the Seahawks defense with Earl Thomas back there, they're better by a factor of two over any other team in the league at covering the deep middle of the field. You know, Area 29 is real.
Yes.
But, you know, then I get to thinking about the defense and as a whole. And all the guys that we have on defense. And Tim Moon, one of our members of the flock on Facebook, says, do you all realize we are watching a once in a generation defense? There has not been a defense with as much personality, physicality, speed and toughness since the Pittsburgh Steelers steel curtain of the 70s. They were the greatest I have ever seen until now. We are seeing their legendary equals, except for one thing. The LOB is faster. Even though many of you did not get to watch the Steelers, I hope you can appreciate the significance of this. They were faster last night than the Panthers could think. It was amazing. And Osprey31 on Reddit posted an incredible graphic. Since 2012, in terms of points allowed, the Seahawks have allowed 300 fewer points than the number two team. The number two team's wow. the New England Patriots. 300 fewer points than them. If you were to take the Seahawks out of it, make New England the number one team, go back 300 points, there's 19 other teams that are within 300 points of the New England Patriots. So you could fit 19 teams in that distance. And that's yeah. how far ahead the Seahawks defense is since 2012. They can weather this. You think about the guys that are on top for Pro Bowl voting, Michael Bennett, Cliff Averill, Bobby Wagner, KJ Wright, Richard Sherman, Cam Chancellor, and Earl. Seven guys. The Seahawks have seven guys within the top five of their position in Pro Bowl voting. You're losing one guy. You still have six. And most teams at best have about two Pro Bowlers. So I tend to think we're going to be okay.
Well, when you rattled off that list of players, I think you kind of gave me some fodder, some things that I'd been thinking about regarding how they weather this. And really, a lot of those guys that you rattled off there were dudes in the front seven. And one of the ways that the Seahawks team can weather the storm with Earl being out all the way to the Super Bowl, because we're going to the Super Bowl, is that front seven, and especially that defensive line. We see Frank Clark really coming of age this season. We see Cliff Averill having a career year. We know Mike Bennett is an absolute game wrecker, somebody that many people in the league feel is the best defensive player in the league.
Mm-hmm.
We've got, you know, Ataba Rubin playing well and Jordan Reed playing well. I mean, yeah, Moore coming in just midseason and being a real force and a really pivotal rotational player. This defensive line is healthy. And basically, one of the ways you can help with that secondary is to get pressure on the quarterback quickly, and especially with just your front four.
Yeah.
And you see even Bobby Wagner blitzing very well this year and really getting to the quarterback, as well as KJ Wright. Those guys have very much come into their own as blitzers this year. So really, it's going to be that pressure from the front seven that I think really offsets the loss of Earl Thomas. I think that is the way that they can get over this. And look for Chris Richard to maybe blitz a little bit more. At the end of the day, I mean, he's a transcendent player in a transcendent secondary, because Tim hit it right on the head. This is a generational defense, a once-in-a-generation defense. And he compared it to the Steelers. I can see that to a degree. But yeah, exactly. Faster.
Well, he said best since the Steelers.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I can see that. But the same idea, I mean, you think about the Hall of Famer slash name recognition of those Steelers teams. It seems very similar to the Seahawks team. The only team I can think of in there was the mid-80s Bears,
mm-hmm.
but they did it for a much shorter period of time. That team, because of the way the league was at that time, it came apart really quickly. You know, losing guys here and there in free agency. So
the Ravens team right around the turn.
Yeah.
Right. And because they did it over a long period too.
Yeah. I think the Ravens team, those are excellent examples too, but definitely an upper tier defense, one that is an all timer. So maybe what we see from this defense going forward is maybe they're not historically great, but still a lead league or
league leading.
Yeah. Those are tough words. League leading. Type defense, and that's enough to get to a Super Bowl and to win a Super Bowl going forward. My question for you, Brandon, is something I've been thinking about. Remember Bob? Do you remember Bob Sanders?
Oh yeah,
of the Colts.
Yeah,
remember he was an undersized safety that was just an animal, just crushed people. He was a difference maker in that defense, and for a couple of years, he might have been the MVP, a defensive MVP of the league. And then the injuries started to pile up. Are we starting to see the beginning of a Bob Sanders unraveling for Earl Thomas here, being an undersized guy who plays the way that he does?
And maybe I wonder that if some of those things are going through Earl's mind when he has an injury like this, because we did see the tweet that came out right midway through the game. And I thought it was important that Tim mentioned both tweets, because I think the media, you know, they take the one tweet and then they don't put it in the context of the other tweet of mm-hmm. Cam owing a mistake. You know, they talk about, oh, you know, trying to read into his feelings, because he says, you know, this game has been so good to me. No regrets. A lot is running through my mind, including retirement. Thanks for all the prayers. And then the tweet immediately right after that is, Cam, you owe me a steak. Ha ha. So it's hard to really get inside of where his mind was at. You know, if he was really considering it that deeply, if it was enough for Cam to owe him a steak, because if that's what it was for running into him, then Tim's right. He owes him more than a steak.
Yeah, right.
And that's the whole thing was weird to me, because I got to thinking, you know, between you and us, we have the steak bet, right? Is there some kind of bet? Like I couldn't help but think that there might have been like some kind of bet made over, oh, you know, if I get injured and go out, you know, it'd be fun to tweet out that I'm going to retire and just see what the media would react to, that sort of thing. Because we haven't heard directly from Earl's mouth after this game. You know, we've seen the tweets. We've seen stories where Ed Werder sent text messages to him, but we've never heard directly from Earl's mouth if he's really seriously considering it, and two, if what he meant by Cam owing a mistake. We don't know.
No, we don't know. I think one thing to take into consideration, Brandon, is that if you and I made tens of millions of dollars at our job, and at the end of a bad day, you come home and you crack open a beer, whether you got hurt on the job or it was just a crappy day, like a super crappy day, you might think about retirement, because you can, you know,
right.
I'm sure it went through his mind. I promise you it did. And you even heard some of the players say that when you do have a devastating injury, maybe one of the first things you think about is retirement.
Yeah.
I mean, it's gotta be back there. Now, I thought you had posted, Brandon, that this was a retweet from an old tweet of his.
Well, you know what it was, is because Ross Bell on her Facebook page, he posted the tweet, and in the UK, the dates flipped. So it looked like instead of December 12th, it looked like May 12th.
So they have the dates screwed up a lot, like they have the word pants screwed up.
Right.
Like underwear is underwear,
pants on the outside.
Pants?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Not on the
underwear is on the inside, guys.
Right. Exactly. That's why they call it underwear.
Right.
It goes underneath.
And for some reason, they put the month on the inside instead of the actual day. So I, you know,
right.
It's all messed up.
Yeah. But I'm not worried about Earl retiring. I don't think that's going to happen. In fact, I'd bet my house on it. He'll be back. There's no doubt about it. It's just a matter of how many more years of peak Earl Thomas do you get? And I'm not sure. I mean, we're kind of getting to that point to where your body kind of breaks down. But this was kind of fluky.
Mm-hmm.
It was a fluky injury. Plus, it's one of those injuries. Looks like he does not need surgery. I think that's a positive right there. And, you know, bone breaks like this, it's not an ACL tear. It's not, you know, soft tissue or ligament damage that you can see that's really could be the type of career-ending injury. It's kind of like people were saying about Jimmy Graham with the torn patella tendon.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those sort of things are more concerning. I think Earl will take some time, get his head right, and he'll definitely be back. And but in the meantime, I think the Seahawks will play a league-leading style of defense, and that will be enough because we saw the reemergence of somebody we've been waiting for a while, Mr. Bizarro Earl Thomas with his intensity. Because we talked about how he's goofy Earl Thomas, and that is the other Thomas, Thomas Rawls.
Yeah. Talk about a guy that just, he looked like the Thomas Rawls that we remember from last season, right? Up until this point of the season, it's like we've been waiting to see, you know, that you see the Wreck-It Rawls memes and those sorts of, he looked like that guy in this game. And you really saw it on his 45-yard touchdown run.
First and 10 from the 45. The handoff to Rawls again. Bounces it right side. Inside the 40, 35 on the run. 20, 15, 10. They catch him now. Touchdown, Seahawks. A 45-yard dart. A bolt of lightning, and it's Thomas Rawls all the way to the end zone. And the Seahawks get that touchdown right back, and they lead 16-7.
What cool vision on that play. Because that's a play that C Mike just runs right up the middle, right?
Yeah.
And gets three yards and it, you know, clouded up. Maybe has a bad spin move somewhere in there. but Thomas Rawls, I mean, he does have superior vision to the other guys that we've been starting in the backfield and superior cutting ability. And you saw it all on display on that. And then to have the breakaway speed later on.
Yeah. That's what really blew me away, that he didn't get caught.
Yeah, yeah. To finish it off, I think that all speaks to him being 100% back. Now, it's interesting, too, this game, he seemed to finally not be running out of his shoes. You know what I mean? I mean, for the first few games, he was trying so hard. He needed to dial back just a little bit, you know?
And try easier. You hear that sometimes with athletes, right? You don't want to try harder. You want to try easier.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of the idea that slow is smooth and smooth is fast.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it's that same kind of thing. So he really seems to be finding his groove back in the offense again. It helped that the offensive line played a much better game than they did the week prior. But having Thomas Rawls back, and if he can please, for the love of everything that's holy, stay healthy for the rest of the year, this team is a contender. I mean, it very much is. It's going to be difficult to stop them because Thomas does close that circle of toughness that Pete Carroll talks about. He finishes runs. He seeks out contact. He goes full on, you know, rolling balls on people. Just absolutely wants to punish the defenders. And it's that kind of attitude that fires up the team and his production. You factor that in, it just makes life so much easier on Russell. And to see that in the game, that might have been the most encouraging thing. Well, second most encouraging thing that came out of that game.
More than 200 yards rushing on a Carolina team that was giving up less than 100 yards on average. And Thomas Rawls goes over 100 yards. And then you also have Tyler Lockett with his big 75-yard touchdown to kick off the second half.
Here comes Tyler Lockett around the far sideline. He's across the 30, the 25, the 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown! Seahawks an end around to start this second half. And Tyler Lockett takes it to the house from 75 yards away. Holy catfish! What a play! Tyler Lockett with his raspberry shoes flies down the far sideline. Even before we could get set up here. Holy smokes, Seattle goes on top 29-7.
And listening to Rabel, I mean, it was barely 7 seconds that where he could. I mean, he was just rattling off the numbers of the fives of yards that were going by as right. Lockett was running in the end zone. Carroll said that they clocked him as a running start for a 40 as a like a 4.02 during that run.
Holy smokes. Yeah. I mean, he really does look explosive out there. And I think he has the last few games. I don't know about you, Brandon, but I felt like I could feel this game coming for Tyler. You knew it was on the dock. Like it was going to happen. I mean, because Russell can only get the ball to one dude per play. And when you have Jimmy Graham balling and you got Doug Baldwin balling and you had CJ Procise balling there for a while, like the idea of getting it to Tyler down in and down out is difficult. But you knew there was going to be a game where Tyler Lockett really went off. And This is the guy that can be a game changer. He's a guy that you have to respect. And it makes it difficult on a defense when you have that many weapons out there. And to see that his speed is fully back. And it wasn't just on those plays. Didn't he look good on special teams too with the returns? I know he didn't house one or anything like that, but he looked shifty. He looked like a difference maker out there.
He did. And when you account for his receiving yards, you know, he had the 40-yard reception, his rushing yards, and his yards that he picked up on special teams, not to mention the yards that got called back on. I didn't think it was a very good block in the back call on McCray, but it looked like the dude fell down in front of McCray is what it looked like.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know.
But, you know, he... Still, with all those yards, he's up around 200 yards, accounting for 200 of the Seahawks' yards. That's the Tyler Lockett that we really expected coming into the season. And if that's the guy that's starting to get healthy at just the right moment, man, talk about him. Talk about Justin Britt coming back from injury. And
let's talk a little Justin Britt. Let's talk a little Justin Britt. Because we joked a little bit last night on the Google Hangout with some of the folks that donate on Patreon was the idea of those, you know, three key players, right? That you can't live without on this team, where it's a Jenga piece like Damashek talks about. And I think we all can agree Russell's one of those. I think if you would have asked me before this game, I would have said Earl Thomas is one of those. But is Justin Britt now the third guy?
Justin Britt's the third guy, Adam.
Is he the third guy? Because we saw this offensive line and this entire offense not be able to function without Justin Britt against a mediocre defensive front in Tampa. And then we see Justin Britt come back this last week and play a defensive front that is one of the tops in the league. It's nothing to sneeze at. And them really dominate that defensive front like they had against the Eagles, like they had previous weeks. And the difference was Brittermilk pancakes. He came back. He had the key block on Thomas Rawls, big touchdown run. The way that he commands the calls in the communication, it allowed Jermaine Ifedi to have a great game. You saw what he means to that offensive line. Center's important. There's a reason why we talk about center all the time on this show. It's not just because we love dudes that, like, you know, put balls in the quarterback's hands. Like, I like the center position is one that is so important and overlooked. And we're seeing it with Justin Britt.
I think you can make the case based on what we've seen with Justin Britt. He might be the team MVP. It's not crazy to think that. Britt was part of Coach Carroll's opening remarks. I mean, he is standing out to that point to where when the coach stands up on the podium after the game, that he's one of the first guys that Pete Carroll wants to point out as having a great game.
So as part of the Britt progression now, going from right tackle to left guard to center to team MVP, is that how this is going?
Well, maybe,
I mean, are we really doing this?
Maybe we get him on the Pro Bowl squad first, but I mean,
right. But it truly is astounding to know that he makes that big of a difference. And I guess it makes sense in the idea that most of the guys on the offensive line don't have a lot of experience.
Yeah.
Other than Bradley Sowell, and that, you know, not all experience is good experience. And that's kind of what we're looking at with him a little bit. But between Fant and Glowinski and Ifedi, those are all very young guys without a lot of experience. And,
yeah,
you know, this is Britt's basically third year. So
yeah,
it makes a huge difference.
The Seahawks able to score on 8 out of 11 drives. And while we're talking about offensive linemen, let's talk about Gary Gilliam, not in the starting lineup, not even active. You know, he's a healthy scratch for this game.
Was he really? I didn't realize that. Wow.
John Clayton this week said he thinks Gilliam is done.
Done. Dunsky's forever.
Based on the feelers that he gets from the team and being around, that he doesn't think Gilliam's going to be back with the team.
Wow. That is very interesting. So basically it must be the fact that Odhiambo has outperformed him even in practice. I mean, that would be right. The only way that they feel comfortable doing this, because we did see Reese come in for George Fant for a couple plays again this game, still dealing with that bum shoulder.
Not only that, but he was in for several plays as tight end. He was, as we talked about going into this week, a way to kind of bolster that offensive line. Then you saw a lot more of Nick Vinette, who was in for almost 30 snaps this game. So you're starting to see them give Russell a little bit more protection on the offensive line.
They are. And I thought Vinette's performance was very inspiring. I thought that well, not inspiring, but encouraging. I mean, he really did have a game where that whole idea that he is a good blocking tight end kind of showed itself a little bit. He had some great blocks out there and then still was able to get out and run some patterns and do some of the things that we heard all through minicamp about just how much he impressed everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So that was, I think that could be a huge part of the Seahawks offense going forward. And I think we talked a little bit about the idea of maybe using him more out there. But it does, again, take one of your playmakers off the field. And we joked, you know, maybe that'd be Curse because, you know, he hasn't had the best year. But even Curse had a good game here this last week and really had the kind of the showing that we have been hoping for.
Well, and one of the things about Curse, too, and he out of receivers, he got more snaps than any of them. And the part of that is because he is so good in the blocking game. You know, he's a big mm-hmm. part of the screen game. And so you have Curse. He's an important part of that offense. And so he was in there for 64 snaps. I mentioned Vinette, Jimmy Graham in there for 53. So, you know, three quarters of the plays, Jimmy Graham was in there. And you just see them using that tight end spot more in this last game between Graham and Vinette with almost 30 snaps. Odhiambo had 11. And like you mentioned, three of those were filling in for Fant when he went down. But that was a nice thing to see for Fant to only go down. It looked like he was hurting pretty badly. And once again, going back to last game to this game, he gets dinged up, but he's right back in there showing some toughness.
Definitely showing some toughness. I got to give him credit for that. I thought one of the interesting things for Fant throughout the game was when they highlighted his blocking technique a little bit and kind of compared it to Remmers, the left tackle for the Panthers, and just hand placement and things like that. And you could kind of tell that, yeah, he's got a ways to go yet, but he is making it work with just his raw athleticism to this point. And yeah. So give him some credit. You know, one area you mentioned that the Seahawks scored on 8 drives. Well, that's cute and all, except for they went 2 for 6 in the red zone, man.
Adam, they scored 40 points. We can't, you know, if we can't criticize the defense when they only scored, you know, allow 2 touchdowns, can we really criticize the offense when they score 40 points?
Yes, 2 for 6 is unacceptable, soldier. You should have scored 80. I mean, that's basically what you're looking at there. But seriously, though, that is something that you have to look at going forward and say, hey, we need to be able to get more efficient in that area of the field. And that, so out of as well as the offense played, that is definitely an area for concern. Now, they did do much better on third down in this game, you know, converting on, I believe, somewhere around 50% on those. So, you know, not. There's some things in there that could be improved on. I don't think it's bad to point that out. We can do that, right?
Yeah, we can. Okay. And I think it is going to be important in this game coming up against Green Bay as well. But before we get there, let's talk about the running game a little bit more, because Fernando at Fur Tejada on Twitter says, being that Pope was active over Collins, is that a sign of having leapfrogged him or just situational based on skills and rival? And then he also puts Farmer's name in there as a question mark. And one thing we saw this week, Farmer waived by the Seahawks. They bring in Marcel Reese as fullback. You have to wonder if maybe Reese is the guy that they now see as being that third down player, or, you know, is Pope going to take on that role? Is Collins going to come back and maybe fill in some of that role? But there's definitely moves at running back that are happening. And we also saw that Will Tukuafu was out, and with the concussion in this game, got a concussion on special teams. And so that could be, you know, with Reese coming on, that could hurt his status on the team. There's also CJ Spiller that's out there for a team that needs a third down back. But Spiller, obviously, there's the concerns of his health based on how many teams he's been cut from this season.
Sure. I mean, he's a guy that I think CJ Spiller is still has some something left in the tank, but he's a borderline player because of his age. But that could fit in for what the Seahawks are doing right now with running back. The next time, Brandon, that I make fun of the Seahawks for drafting like 17 running backs in a draft, slap me, because clearly you go through them like underwear, man. Like, it's impossible. It's impossible to keep these guys healthy because of the nature of the position. It really has been a tough year injury-wise back there. The addition of Marcel Reese, I think, is very interesting. I think he actually fits into this offense very well when you think about the idea that it's going more towards a Russell Wilson-centric type offense, and to the quick passing game and things like that. Look, if you have one more weapon out there Because let's be real. Marcel Reis is a great pass catcher. He's a guy who's a real athlete. He's a guy that just, he's torn up the Broncos so many times playing for the Raiders. He was their kryptonite. Like, he can really play. And having him being able to leak out of the backfield and be a check down is really cool. The idea of him playing third down back, possibly. I look to Pope for that. I think he has the skill set and the body type for it and the quickness. It's just for the eyeball test, he kind of fits there for me. But yeah, a lot going on in the backfield there. And we'll see if Mr. T survives and is on the team. But I mean, it's getting to the point now where we break up with Mr. T every other week.
Right. Well, one guy not mentioned as part of that backfield, he was in the backfield last year and is the topic of this week's edition of Prisco's World.
La 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 la, la 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 la, Prisco's World. La 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 la, la 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 la, Prisco's World. Prisco has his hot tastes and nothing more. That's Prisco's World.
And I know what you're saying, back so soon. Why are we back in Prisco's World so soon?
Well, apparently, do we get frequent flyer miles for going to Prisco's World? Because it would be great if we did.
It would be. Well, Marshawn Lynch was at the game this week and standing on the sideline, having a good old time with his former teammates, you know, up three scores late in the game on the sidelines, just having fun with his former players. Apparently, Pete Prisco has something against camaraderie of former teammates, because Pete likened Marshawn showing up on the sideline like he's some kind of high school grad showing up at prom. His first what? Tweet, listen to this, Adam. Okay. His first tweet says, "You're an ex-player now, Marshawn. They don't care." He follows that up with, "Marshawn like the graduated senior who comes back to school and nobody cares." Yeah, those guys don't care. The crowd that went nuts for him when they showed him on the sideline, they didn't care. Rewatching the guys on the sideline, they didn't look like people who didn't care. Listen to Thomas Rawls after the game. He was fired up about Marshawn Lynch being there. But no, those guys, they didn't care.
No, definitely didn't care. You know, this sounds a lot like to me, Brandon, that maybe Pete Prisco went back to his high school after graduating for a year or two and people didn't care. They were probably excited that he had been gone. Like, this sounds like jealousy to me. This sounds like a guy who is very jealous of the fact that Marshawn Lynch could just stroll back into the stadium and be one of the more beloved people on the field immediately.
Yeah, I think there's definitely some insecurity about his own high school experiences there.
And that's definitely it.
Apparently, associating Marshawn with his high school days is a thing for Prisco, Adam, because back in 2015, he tweeted about grabbing Lynch, let's say, by the P in OPP.
Oh,
he said, and this was after one of Marshawn's big runs, right? He says 15-yard penalty for a crotch grab, finally. And then he goes on to say, like I told some guys this week, if Lynch did that against my team and I was a player, I'd twist it like a pretzel underneath the pile.
Jeez.
And then he says, I did that once to a guy in high school. You know, there's a pretty big difference, Pete, in grabbing your own crotch versus grabbing someone else's. How did Pete Prisco announcing on Twitter that he assaulted an underage male in high school not make the news when he tweeted this back in January 2015? This is still in your Twitter timeline, Pete.
It's basically the equivalent of Trump's video of grabbing by the, you know.
Yeah, the P and OPP.
Yeah. He's grabbing them too. Apparently, this is an epidemic and Pete Prisco's a part of it. I don't know, man. Yeah, that's it. He's an odd duck, man. He's just an odd duck. Here's the thing. So Prisco says he did this in high school. Like, I can't imagine like that occurring to me as something to do to another male out on a football field. Like, that thought process doesn't enter.
No.
Like, maybe poke him in the eye, give him a dirty shot,
elbow maybe in the thigh.
Yeah, man, the kidney or something. Like, I get that. I mean, I get that. But to go on, full on schlong grab, like, I don't understand it. He's a weird dude. He obviously has a thing against Marshawn, because let's not lie, when you go beast mode like he did on the epic Beastquake run, you get to do whatever you want in the end zone. You do. And honestly, like that maneuver right there, like just looking at the whole Saints defense and saying, D's nuts. Like, I think that was appropriate. Pete needs to mellow out on this one.
But what do you say we get on to talking about this upcoming game against the Packers?
Yeah, sounds good, man. Well, Seahawks go on the road to take on the Packers in Lambeau. And we saw this last weekend. It was a snowy mess. Sounds like it could be a similar situation when the Seahawks go up there this week. There's obviously a lot of history between the Packers and the Seahawks, whether it's recently played games or even the Holmgren connection over the years, and Hasselbeck as well. So I don't know, man. Like, this is one of those games the Packers are supposedly riding high off a two-game winning streak. But honestly, in many ways, I think that the Seahawks match up very well against this version of the Packers.
They do. And that's what brings me up a little bit. It's the history thing that I can't get over with this team. The last time the Seahawks won in Lambeau, Mike Holmgren was the coach of the Seahawks. And Matt Hasselbeck, Adam, was the on the Green Bay Packers roster backing up Brett Favre. That was the last time. It was 1999. It was Holmgren's first game back after leaving the Packers. He wins 27-7, and Seattle hasn't won there since. It's the Holmgren curse, Adam.
Well, what did we ever do to Holmgren to be cursed?
Maybe it was just some sort of deal with the devil to get Hasselbeck to come to Seattle, because as soon as Hasselbeck came over, we haven't won there since.
Maybe. Okay. That's fine. I think there's maybe just that Lambeau's a tough place to play and they've had some really good teams and a dude named Brett Favre.
Okay.
I think that has some
curse.
No, I mean, cause honestly, if you're going to go with a curse, you could definitely come up with maybe we want the ball and we're going to score curse. Like that I'd buy that one a little bit more.
Well, the curse may have already been in place at that point, because you know, if that was part of Holmgren's deal to get Hasselbeck to Seattle, he may have been cursed by that moment.
That's possible.
Before that moment.
That's possible. Or he just invoked the curse by uttering those words into the open mic in overtime. Like that might have been what happened there. But this game, we don't have to worry about curses, I don't think. Other than our own curse and Jermaine curse, just hopefully he's having another good day catching the ball. But this Packers team, not the Packers team that we've seen the last few years, not the same Packers team that everybody kind of has put in the conversation over the last few years of being a real contender for the Super Bowl. In my opinion, I feel like this has become a very one-dimensional team. And it's been difficult for them, especially offensively, for spurts this year.
Well, and really that is the one dimension that that can make or break this team, is the offense. And when Aaron Rodgers is really, really good, they're able to beat teams. Their defense may not matter as much. If they can shut teams down. Now, they shut down the Texans just fine this last week in Lambeau, held them to 7 points for most of the game, finished with 13. But, you know, definitely the Packers were in control of that game throughout it. Aaron Rodgers seemed to have finally got that connection going with Jordy Nelson, because up until this point in the season, it had been really sporadic, but he had a perfect passer rating when targeting Nelson this last game. So you have to wonder, are the Packers, are they getting it together on offense at just the right time? Their defense, clearly, I mean, they've given up 40 points a couple times this season. And with the Seahawks offense, that's why I really think it's going to come down to a couple key statistics between these two teams.
Well, the easiest way to beat Aaron Rodgers as far as limiting his production is to keep him off the field. And the fact that the Packers can't run the ball and extend drives, I mean, basically, they were starting, who was it? The kid from Stanford at running back for a while, the wide receiver.
Right, Montgomery.
Montgomery, yeah, Ty Montgomery. They were starting him at running back there for a stretch. Now,
they're still running him out of the backfield. They ran him out of the backfield against the Texans.
Exactly. Are we going to see some C-Mike in this game?
Well,
I'm curious.
I think he had 9 or 10 carries against the Texans, too, so we will see him.
Okay, so that'll be interesting. Now, as far as our running game is concerned, I think that's where we can have some success. And really, when you see Thomas Rawls do the sort of things that that he does, it really gives you a lot of hope. Now, the Packers are ranked 9th against the rush in the league this year, but they were also ranked 1st against the rush at some point earlier on. I never really did buy into that. Now, a lot of that revolves around the fact that their linebackers aren't particularly special. I mean, a lot of people, I look at Clay Matthews as a defensive end more than I do a linebacker. But they have some problems up front, and they are able to get pushed around. You can move the ball on them through the ground. And I think the Seahawks will have a very good opportunity to get that running game going. And really, that will help them a lot in these conditions. It'll be a big contrast compared to the Packers having to go to the throwing game again in messy conditions. And I think that favors the Seahawks significantly.
Well, the Packers are by far, I mean, they throw the ball just about more than any other team, 65% of the time. So 2/3 of the time they're throwing the football. And that's why I think it's going to be really important to see how the Seahawks, you know, because there's a lot of questions going into this game. Is Steve Terrell, is he going to be the type of player that Earl Thomas, you know, play the single deep safety, or are they going to play more two deep now that, you know, not having quite the abilities as a guy like Earl Thomas, and against a team like Aaron Rodgers, who can throw it all over the field? You know, this is a real test for the secondary now, right out of the gate, losing Earl Thomas, going up against a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers. Maybe he hasn't been the Aaron Rodgers of old, but looking at his past game against the Texans, I mean, talk about how much difference it makes and when you play a team at what point of the season, because Aaron Rodgers earlier this year did not look the same. And now he's getting out there and 11 plays under pressure against the Texans with a quarterback rating of 122. You know, better in that stat. I mean, that's like Russell Wilson. What we're used to seeing from Russell Wilson, right, is when you get pressure on him, that's when guys like that make their biggest plays.
And the other thing is it's difficult to get pressure on Aaron Rodgers. Their offensive line is a pretty darn good offensive line overall.
And he moves around really, really well. He's able to just do those little shifts to move and have a guy run right past him and then give him a little bit extra time to find the open guy.
Very true. Now, you wondered a little bit about Steven Terrell and what sort of defense that the Seahawks will employ. Well, I promise you that Aaron Rodgers will go after Terrell a little bit. He's gonna test that single high safety look just to see, sure, you know, is he going to be able to perform? Now, I don't believe that they're going to go to a lot of two safeties deep throughout this game, because if you look at the touchdown pass from Cam Newton this last game, first play out of the gate, like, of course you always attack directly the guy that's just coming in cold. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what you do. But to try to protect him, the Seahawks played a too high safety look in that instance, and it didn't work out. I mean, they had some communication
issues.
They had
a linebacker on Ted Ginn.
Yeah, minor detail. So I don't see them changing what they do in that fashion. One thing that is helpful is the fact that the Packers receivers have had difficult time getting separation all year long. And between Shedd, Lane, and Sherman, those are guys that can really do a number on Jordy Nelson and company. That's not a receiving core that I fear in any way, shape, or form. I mean, Devontae Adams has come on strong the last few games. I get that. And he's a big body guy, but that's somebody that Shedd can handle all day. You look at Randall Cobb, that, you know, kind of the shifty sort of, I don't know, like Swiss Army knife kind of player for them. That's a guy that Jeremy Lane can eat. He can eat his lunch all day. Mm-hmm. That's somebody that he is well equipped to deal with. And then Jordy Nelson on Richard Sherman. Good luck and good night, man. Like, Sherman's got that all day long. It's going to be a very interesting matchup. I think when you look at us defensively, it's going to come down to the trenches in this game. I don't think we'll have any problem stopping the run game. That won't be an issue. The Seahawks are excellent against that, and the Packers being a poor running team. It'll be if Mike Bennett and company can get pressure on Aaron Rodgers throughout the game. And I understand that his quarterback rating is high in those situations. It's high against other teams in those situations. Get a little pressure on him with that defensive backfield, even with Earl out, you're going to have problems.
Well, to me, I think it comes down, and we talked about this being a problem against the in this last game against the Panthers, is third down percentage, especially inside the red zone or red zone scoring percentage. And when I look at the two different offenses, Seattle scoring inside the red zone less than 50% of the time, they're 48%. The Packers up around 55%. And the difference between their third down conversion percentage is even bigger. There's a 10% difference with the Packers almost at 50%, Seattle down near around 36%. So And then on defense, though, is where it's going to make a big difference, because that defense of the Packers allowing 65% of times the teams to score inside the red zone, where the Seahawks much better at that. It's under 50%. So I think scoring inside the red zone, if the Seahawks are getting touchdowns against the Packers, that's what they're going to have to do, because that's the other thing about the Packers in terms of they're the second best team in the league in getting red zone opportunities. They're up over 4 red zone opportunities per game. So if you're letting them get in the red zone that much and allowing them to get touchdowns, you're talking about overcoming a deficit. You're talking about having to put up 30 points, and that can be tough to do on the road.
It can be tough to do on the road. It's totally doable for this team, especially against a defense that's the caliber of the Packers. I mean,
could be a shootout, Adam. This could be a shootout.
Yeah, they're 23rd in the league as far as points per game given up on defense, and that's bottom third. I mean, that's not good. Look, this could be a shootout. If it does get into an offensive slugfest, one thing that I do like is that Seattle is very good at defense in the red zone. It's something that we do well. I mean, the idea of the bend and don't break thing is a real thing. I guess one thing that does concern me is you did bring up the third down percentage. I mean, the Packers being second in the league at converting on their third downs, and the Seahawks defense seemingly having problems, although they looked good this last week.
Yeah,
when it came to stopping teams on third down. It should be interesting. This isn't a gimme. It's not the gimme that it looked like maybe 4 weeks ago.
Right.
That's why when people talk strength, the schedule drives me nuts, because you got to see what the team's looking like at that time. And it is in a hostile environment. I think this is a game, though, that we saw the Seahawks come out against Tampa and look fairly flat. You know, kind of that trap game that a lot of people kind of talk about.
Yeah.
Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers in Lambeau. I'm pretty sure that's a game this team will be up for.
I think so, too, because that's not a team that you go in thinking that you can maybe take a little bit, you know, let a little bit off the gas. No. And you mentioned it. There's history between these two teams. This is starting like Carolina. It's, even though it's not a divisional game, it feels like a rivalry game.
It absolutely does. There's a lot of people that, it's funny how many people put, like, say, Carolina as now a rival with the Seahawks. They put Green Bay as now a rival with the Seahawks. One fun thing when you have a team that's like this one that has put together a lot of success over a long period of time now is that you get to watch rivals come and then go. Remember when it was the 49ers?
Yeah. Yeah.
And remember when it was the Panthers, and now they can't even, you know, get out of their own way. They're not even going to win one of the worst divisions in football. Like, and now you're talking the Packers as a possible rival. Well, this is a team that really has rarely beaten the Seahawks during this iteration. I don't know. Have we even lost to them?
Well, we did last year when we went to Lambeau. Okay.
That's true. All right. So in a team that is definitely on the downswing, in my opinion, it'll be, I don't see them as a rival, I guess. I see them as just another team.
Well, when are the Rams going to hit their downswing, Adam? I'm ready for that team to hit their downswing against the Seahawks.
Well, it won't be over the next 2 years because they extended Jeff Fisher.
Yeah. Great. Yeah. I'm super happy about that.
Aren't you?
Well, I am. I mean, I'm glad to have one less competitor when it comes to winning the division, but there's 2 losses per year.
That's fine if it means it. Yeah. 2 losses and you don't have to worry about them.
Yeah.
Like, that's fine. I'll make that trade.
I guess it's a fair trade.
It is. That's fine.
I don't like it, but I guess I'll make it.
Right. Be mired in mediocrity at 7-9 for the next decade. That'll be fantastic.
Well, congratulations, LA fans.
Oh, man, that's brutal.
Well, Adam,
somewhere Eric Dickerson's pissed.
I think they did that just to turn the screws on a little bit.
All right. So Seahawks by 10 in this game. That's my prediction.
I like it. I'm going to say it's only going to be by a field goal. And I think it's a shootout. I think the first team to score more than 30 gets it.
I think that's a very solid prediction. So, get ready for some scorn, folks. Should be fun.
Well, with that said, let's come back. Let's hear what Clinton Bonner has to say about this week's 3-in, 3-out. And we'll come back and we'll talk to Patrick Seahawk Duncan. Don't you
On this week's 3-3 Out, we're going all Paula Abdul on you as we take two steps forward and one big step back, as it was our turn to dance with the Black Cats from Carolina. We'll be talking Big Perm, Big Sherm, the return of the Rocket, and even how Chop Chop put in by far his best effort of the year. And yes, we cannot ignore the fact that Area 29 will now be sidelined for the remainder of the season. So grab your best dancing shoes and let's go 3-3 Out, which is written exclusively for the Seahawkers podcast.
This week on our Seahawker Spotlight, we're talking to Patrick Seahawk Duncan. He's the public affairs guy for the Kitsap Seahawkers, and he was recently featured on Tackle My Ride and most recently highlighted in the Better at Life segment on episode 135 of the Seahawkers podcast. That's probably, Adam, that's probably the most important thing here.
Oh, that's easily the most prestigious out of all that, and definitely where he got his most
fame. The biggest highlight of Patrick's past year, I'm sure. Patrick, how you doing?
Hey, great. Thanks for having me on. And no doubt that's top of the list, getting on the official Seahawkers podcast.
Excellent. So, Patrick, I think the first question we all want to know is about the middle name, Seahawk. When and why did that come about?
Yeah, so you guys remember 2013 season, I'm sure. And during the summertime, we knew we had a good team. So everyone called me Seahawk anyway. So I kind of just made a little bet there, because that week two game we played the 49ers, national TV. Mm-hmm. You know, they had just gone to the Super Bowl the year before. So I said, you know, hey, when we beat them, I'm going to do it. I'm going to legally change my middle name to Seahawk. And everybody kind of, you know, said BS and, yeah, no way, you're not going to do it. So I made the proclamation that I would jinx the season if I didn't. So as we got closer to the playoffs, we had the number one seed in the NFC, and I kind of didn't want to be the reason we jinxed that season, so I changed it, and then we won the Super Bowl, so it all worked out.
I think it's fun how we all have our superstitions of what we think that we need to do personally to make sure we don't jinx the team. We talk about it every week. It's just, yeah, we all have our own thing.
It's only weird if it doesn't work, I think, was a statement a few years ago. Right. And yeah, I mean, you talk to every fan and they've got a lucky spot, or, you know, you got a jersey change here or whatever you can do to feel a part of it. Hey, I'm all for it.
So tell us about how you became a fan of the team. Judging from watching the show Tackle My Ride, you have been a fan for a while.
I claim that I became a fan in 1984 because that's the first game I can remember, AFC wild card game against the Dolphins. And, you know, my parents were fans from the day one. And so growing up, you know, Steve Largent, Dave Craig, all those guys were, you know, kind of like my heroes. And Cortez Kennedy is still my favorite Seahawk of all time. So, but growing up, we every weekend, my parents and family and everybody would get together, you know, at a different family member's house and watch the game and cook good food. So it was at a young age, I kind of got that going. And so we still do the same thing now.
Well, let's get into the show, Tackle My Ride. And how did all of this come about for you?
I would say it was right around May. A lot of the Seahawk chapters probably got the same invite or casting call, if you will. So they sent something out saying, hey, you know, somebody who wants to have their car made over and does a, you know, good work in the community, then, you know, nominate them or whatever. So my wife wrote up a little thing, nominated me, and it's kind of how it started. And that was back in the springtime.
Very cool. And so you got picked for that. And now how was the whole experience being on the show? Like, once you got selected, for someone who hasn't seen the show, kind of how did they contact you and how did it all get started?
Yeah, so for the better part of a few months, we did all these interviews, and you got to do background checks and all kinds of stuff. And they contacted me and they said, hey, you're a finalist, and we're going to send the producer out to come look at your truck and see if it fits the budget and if it's something that we can do. Mm-hmm. That was not really the full truth. That was actually, they were sending the show out to do the film. So at the beginning of the show, you see them, you know, show up at my house. And one of the rules that they said, you know, they said, hey, they might want to do some filming while they're out there, just, you know, some final things. So make sure you wear a shirt that doesn't have any logos on it or anything like that. Because, I mean, I really don't have any shirts that don't have Seahawks stuff on them, which is weird. So at the beginning, everyone's like, what are you doing? You're wearing this, like, you know, this plain green looking shirt, you know, but that was one of the parts they did there. So, So Lamar Woodley, ex Super Bowl champion, with the Steelers and, the Cardinals last year, he was here. And then, James Torres, who was on the Chip Foose show that they did, car makeover show. Anyways, they showed up and we, you know, went over my truck, and it's an old truck. It's a 1992 Dodge, and but it's a diesel, and you know, I do a lot of camping and outdoor stuff, so it works for us. And so the premise of the show was they were gonna take it to New Mexico and, you know, trick it out in some sort of Seahawks way, you know, theme paint job or whatever. And a few weeks later, I took my truck to this car hauling place where they were going to haul it down there to New Mexico to do the work. And if you've ever been on the freeway and seen those 100-foot semis, you know, the big double-decker trailers?
Yeah.
That was what it was on, and it was on the very top back of that trailer. So when a few days later, I got a call after, you know, I helped the guy load it up, and we talked for a while, and the producer of the show calls me and tells me that truck was in a wreck. So then I thought, well, you know, it's a little sad that my truck won't get done, but you know, it's just a truck, right?
Yeah.
And so they said, well, okay, we'll find another one. We'll redo another truck just like yours. You can see that, I mean, that truck was ruined. And the first time I saw pictures of it was when we were watching it live on the NFL Network.
So that was the first time that you saw the pictures?
Yeah. Wow. So I might have teared up a little bit watching that. But
what kind of reactions have you been getting about your truck since having it redone? Because for people who haven't seen it, you have to go on YouTube, find the episode of the show, watch it. But if nothing else, you have to see a picture of this truck.
Yeah. So what's kind of weird, though. So this whole thing, right? So I get a new truck, and the film company's out of New York, so they buy this truck, and then they transfer the title over to them, and then they're transferring it to me. So until about 4 days ago, I haven't been able to drive my truck. They paid for a rental the whole time, but it's just been sitting in my carport here. So I've only had like 4 days of driving it after the show aired, but there's lots of people honking, and you know, you see people, hey, dude, nice truck, man. I saw you on the show, and you know, so it's pretty cool. And this weekend we're taking it to a veterans home around here, so all the Seahawks fans can get their pictures taken with it. And I'm trying to give back, you know, because I got incredibly lucky, got a huge gift, you know. So I'm just trying to share it now.
Now, one of the coolest things about not only the reveal of the truck was that you had Cliff Avril present the truck to you. What was that experience like?
Yeah, so we were over at the VMAC, and they had told us that they were gonna, you know, let us get a tour, check things out. So I was actually really stoked about that, and I didn't expect Cliff to come driving up in it. But when he did, it was just like, how is this possible? You know, Cliff Avril's driving my truck. Here's my new truck. I didn't know what to do. Like, do I look at the truck? Do I talk to Cliff? It's, you know, it was a lot of things at once. but one of the funny things of the show, so Cliff Avril, you know, there's a scene on there where he says, hey, you know, you got 200 jerseys. Do you have mine? And so, of course, I had his, but they made me show him giving to me was actually one that I brought, you know, the throwback Avril. So they put it in the truck. I did this whole thing. So everybody's been giving me some grief, like, seriously, you got 200 jerseys and you don't have a Cliff Avril? And I was, you know, I'm like, well, yeah, actually I have a few, but they made it look that way in the show just to, you know, spice it up a little bit.
They did you wrong. See, they took your, oh, well, you get a truck out of the deal. You can, yeah, you can take I'm a little not, bit of hit to your Seahawks fandom cred.
Yeah. So I'll be explaining that one for a while, I think.
I had your back on this, though. I tried finding an Avril jersey in the Seahawks pro shop at the stadium and couldn't find one. So, you know, I would have had your back either way.
Yeah, they haven't got him yet, but I guarantee after the year he's having with all the sacks and stuff, I think they'll have it next year. And And they showed a lot on the show of how much he gives back, being, you know, his parents are originally from Haiti. Mm-hmm. And so the other Seahawkers, I don't know if you've you guys had a chance to check out the Tornado Alley guys. I know Josh was on a few weeks ago.
Yeah, we had him on a couple weeks ago.
And they're doing that, the fundraiser where every time Cliff gets a sack, we all donate money. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to build a, with them, we're trying to build a house in Haiti, just like Cliff is doing. So I think we're about 60% of the way to our goal. So got a little ways to go, but as long as Cliff keeps getting sacks, we should get there.
You know, even though, you know, it's $20 out of our pocket every week, that's like, I'm happy to see him get the sacks every single week.
It's pretty awesome when you see him get one. You're like, yes, that cost me $20.
Yes. Makes you feel like you're part of it.
Exactly.
All right. Well, is there anything that the Kitsap Seahawkers have going on right now?
Yeah, right now we are in our big end of the year charity raffle. So, I've been collecting, me and some of the other members, I do a lot of, autograph signings and stuff. So I've collected Walter Jones helmets and Kurt Warner autographs. And then we've also got a local painting. We did it last year too. This local artist out of Seattle does some really incredible work. And, so we got the Doug Baldwin painting that's the grand prize. So
nice.
That'll be going down on January 1st. So if anybody out there wants to get a hold of me on Facebook or anything like that, I've got a lot of cool prizes. And if anybody wants to join it, just let me know.
All right. Well, I can put a link to your Facebook profile in there. And if that's open for anybody to get in on, then I will have them contact you.
Yeah, definitely. The more the merrier. And like I said, if you're out of the area, I will gladly ship whatever you win to you. So it will be live on Facebook so you guys can all see it. Halftime versus the 49ers.
Perfect. Well, Patrick, thanks for coming on the show. Really appreciate it. I think with that, go Hawks.
Go Hawks. Appreciate you guys having me.
A huge thanks to Patrick for joining us on the show. You know, one of the things I found surprising was that he's only had the truck for like 4 days, being able to drive it.
Yeah, no, that surprised the heck out of me too. But he's going to get a lot of enjoyment out of that. I can't think of another person that would enjoy that more than him.
Yeah.
I think it fits really well. I'm excited for him. I think it was a great choice. And they did a bang-up job on that thing, man. It is cool.
Let's get into this week. Again, thanks to Clinton Bonner for his 3-in, 3-out each week. And check that out at SeahawkersPodcast.com/3i30. Let's talk pick 'em, Adam. Let's look who's up on the leaderboards right now. And on the Seahawkers podcast overall leaderboard for the Steve Largent signed jersey, Easley Street still hanging on to that number one spot. Man,
dude, he ain't going away this year, man. Like he's just been on it all year. Like just not a bad week. I can't even be mad about it now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, you know, just hats off, dude.
Easley Street at 1700, Super Tecmo Rawls right behind, 20 points at 1680. And then you got Lieutenant Nacho Cheese and Biggity Cool at 1670. Kind of the same names, not a whole lot of movement right there. A lot of people up top just continuing to make good picks.
Well, what I can't understand is somehow I'm falling behind and I had a good week.
Yeah.
Like from the leaders, I don't get this.
Congratulations to Neutral Zone and Fraction, who was the top spot at 170 points on the Seahawkers podcast leaderboard.
Solid name, too.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
So email us and we'll get you a sticker and maybe throw in a couple months of bonus shows, too.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Looking at the patron leaderboard, those of you in the flock, got a bunch of you up there at finishing the top spot. Toonhawk, Super Tecmo Rawls, the DCH, and J Wonder 10, all four finished with 160 points. But the tiebreaker goes to Super Tecmo Rawls.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, congratulations, guys. God, 20 points better than me. God, I just two games. That's tough.
I only missed three this week. That's pretty good on a week like that to only miss three.
Yeah. As it was, there were some odd results last week, no doubt about it.
Yeah. Tune in to all 32 picks and IPAs each week, and you will get our picks and see what our thinking is behind each game.
Right. And usually I know more about the league than both of you. So it's really fun. It's a fun show. It's a really fun show.
Fun for you this year, but.
And last year.
Let's welcome some new members of the flock. You can go to getintheflock.com. Let's start with Andy Perham. He donated $21.12, a one-time donation via our PayPal support page at SeahawkersPodcast.com/support. Says he was asking about a jersey, trying to find a KJ Wright jersey. Also, another one hard to find. And a guy that we should have mentioned KJ Wright in the first part of the show, because he had another heck of a game this week.
He sure did. One of those guys, again, just unsung. We say this every other week about him, and so unsung that we didn't even talk about him in the first half of the show.
And now he had a forced fumble and a ton of tackles.
Well, Pro Football Focus has noticed they have him rated at an elite level.
Yeah.
At this point in the season. So they have that right at the very least.
He needs to make the Pro Bowl this year. And Andy knew that and was looking for a jersey. So I wanted to thank him. And he sent along a little note to us saying that it's not much for the couple of years that he's listening. And he thought he owed us, but especially since Adam's rants are so entertaining, accurate, and always reflect how I'm feeling. Cheers and go Hawks.
Oh, well, thanks, man. Because it's definitely what I'm feeling at the moment. There's no doubt about that.
Garrett in Espanola, he upped his pledge to join the Ring of Honor Facebook page. So welcome to Garrett to the Ring of Honor. And also welcome to the flock to Dylan Williams. And a welcome to the flock to John Brown. Both of them are joining our Pick'em League. And a welcome to the flock to Robert Gomes, who will be getting a sticker and the bonus shows.
Awesome. Hey, thanks a lot, guys. We do appreciate it. We say it pretty much week in, week out. We steal the notion from other shows is that it's value for value. If you enjoy the show and it makes your life a little better, then, Brandon, I think there's a new goal we could shoot for with all you generous patrons. And really, it's not going to cost you much, you know, like $1 a month. And you could help make a dream come true for me. Brandon has experienced this once, but I never have.
It's essentially life-changing. If every single person were to donate $1 to the show, it could make you and I, it could give us both the opportunity to go to the Super Bowl if everybody gave just $1.
Right. Yeah. I mean, do that for us, man. We'd appreciate it a ton. Plus, you get the bonus shows. Plus, we'll send you a sticker. Well, two stickers. You get the regular sticker, and then you get the In the Flock bumper sticker as well, which is pretty cool. So, you know, it's not for nothing. I mean, we hook you up at the end of the day, too. And to all of you that already support us via Patreon and through your one-time donations, thank you so stinking much. We really can't say thank you enough.
So yes, thanks to everybody who is in the flock and is helping to support the show. What do you say we get on to some reviews?
I would appreciate that. Do we have some new reviews?
No, we don't. Never mind. We don't have any reviews.
Are you sure?
No.
You might want to look again.
Do I want to look?
I think there was a review. I think there was one.
Oh.
Maybe it was a revised review. That's what's got you so goofed up here. Hey. Maybe it's not there. I mean, just check.
Okay. You know what? I think you're right. And I didn't want to do this, but yes, it's here. And I think this is going to stroke your ego a little bit, which is something you don't need. But we'll do it anyway. A 5-star review from TZ Shaw 29 says, only gets better. I have some bad news. I can no longer be the solo 3-star review. After I stated that Adam is incredibly biased and that I would start listening to the UK podcast, I still had to tune in every week to listen to this podcast. Ever since I dropped the 3-star review, the podcast has only gotten better. Brandon has always been great, but I always thought Adam was a spaz. However, my opinion has done a 180. Adam has hijacked my thoughts and now brings up all the same good/bads of previous games. I can no longer say he doesn't know what he's talking about or that he's biased, especially after his thoughts on the Bucks game. I started listening in the summer and I wasn't too fond of the podcast early in the season, but like most Hawks fans, I'm used to a second half surge. I'm in. Keep up the good work, boys. X3-star reviewer TZ Shaw 29.
Well, thank you very much for your revised review, my good friend. I'm glad that you've seen the light. But Brandon, you said that was going to stroke my ego. You've always been great. That's what, you've always been great. So, that has to feel good to you.
Well, I had read it and knew that and got the ego stroke that I needed. I was just wasn't sure if you needed it.
Oh, okay. Well, it does feel nice. But the one thing I would like to point out about this is This is how awesome our listeners are. Like, I mean, to still stick with it, even when annoyed at times or whatever, and then to come around and be super cool about it all. I think it reflects more on the listeners than it does, you know, either one of us. I mean, you guys are awesome, man. We literally have the best listeners in the world. I'd put our group up against anybody.
It's true. And I tend to think that maybe they have a sickness, because I looked at the numbers after the Bucks show and how that Tampa Bay game, how the post game for the Tampa Bay Bucks show could be one of our most downloaded shows. I have no idea. That's what I mean.
I have no idea.
They have a sickness.
But we appreciate you guys. Appreciate the review, dude. He was right too. He may not have done a 180 on everything. I am still a spaz. That was accurate. That was definitely accurate.
Fair enough. Couple emails here from Dan in Olympia. He has the first one. Says, "Hey fellas, just listening to the latest Seahawkers podcast, and I have to unfortunately ruin your beautiful mind pattern deal regarding win streaks following a single digit score game. Following the tie in Arizona, we did not win four games in a row. We lost in New Orleans the following week, and then we won the next three leading up to the Tampa game. I just felt that needed to be pointed out. Love the podcast. Keep it up and go Hawks."
Go Hawks, Dan. Thanks for keeping us on our toes, man.
Well, here's the thing is I knew we didn't beat New Orleans. I had actually meant to say that we went on runs where as a team, they scored 20 or more points. But this team should win when they score at least 20 points. So instead of being technical about whether or not there was an actual win that went into the win column, let's just use 20 points as a metaphor for a win. And then my theory still it still stands.
That's hilarious. Okay. All right, man. I can roll with you on that.
But yeah, thanks, Dan. You're the only one that emailed about that, by the way.
Yeah. No, who's got the beautiful mind now?
Yeah, I don't
know. Dan. Yeah.
I didn't see him come up with a better theory. I just saw him knock down mine.
Which was beautiful to me.
Andy in Port Angeles says, "Hey, I got to do better for you. For a long time, I've been trying to..." Oh, this is Andy, our new member of the flock.
Yes. Oh, okay. Right on.
Where he said, "I've been trying to decide on what jersey to get and finally settled on KJ Wright, the unsung hero. The only problem is when I went to the pro shop, they didn't have his jersey. I would have to spend $170 to get a custom number 50. You can get an Earl Thomas jersey, a Sherman jersey, which are both awesome. You can still order it. You can even still order a Derek Coleman and Percy Harvin jersey." I know they're trying to shed their backlog merch, but how do you not stitch up some Cage jerseys? Hey, online pro shop, do better. And always keep up the great work and go Hawks.
Go Hawks, Andy, and hell yeah. That's
catfish.
It is. How can you have X players, especially a cancer like Percy, and you don't have one of the, you know, more, I don't know, just core guys of the team who's awesome? How do you not have his jersey?
Yeah, it makes no sense. Mike Meskel in Portland says, "Some podcasts have an Amazon affiliate link. They get a commission every time somebody buys something after clicking the link. I was doing some shopping for Christmas and wanted to see if you guys had that set up through Amazon. I didn't see a link on your website. I don't know how much the commission is, but it'd be helpful for the show, even if it was for just beer money, well, for when you guys record. P.S. A while back, Adam was pushing for an off-season show where you guys got liquored up beforehand. You should revisit this idea. I'm in full support."
I agree. Yeah, thanks for not letting us forget about that one.
And Mike, I did go back, and actually our Amazon affiliate link expired because nobody used it over over a 6 month period. So yep. I went back and reauthorized it. So if you go to SeahawkersPodcast.com/support, it'll be up there along with any other things that you might use.
Right. Yeah. If you're buying it anyways, do it through the link and, you know, hook us up with a couple bucks.
Yeah.
It's sweet. Everybody wins.
Everybody wins. You get your thing. You don't have to pay anymore. And we just get a little kickback.
Yeah.
Beer money is good.
So are drunk podcasts.
Well, we're getting there. You know, we're almost to the $800 level where we were going to do our extra off-season shows.
Right.
So people can have their weekly fix of Seahawks football, you know, whether it's the latest news or whether or not we're talking about historical parts or maybe having some interesting interviews week to week during the off season. We're almost there.
I don't know if I'm excited about that or not.
I've had this figured out, though, Adam. We see we can record more than one show at a time.
Now you're talking. Yeah. Okay.
And then, we can have our 2-week breaks.
Okay. I like it. All right. I'm feeling more excited.
Yeah. All right, Adam, what do you say we get into some do better and better at life?
Yeah, man.
I'm going to kick us off with the do better because, okay, Adam, this week I love the fact that the NFL allowed players to customize their cleats.
Like that was pretty cool.
I just like that they're able to make that one concession for 1 week for players to help support their favorite causes. And I was so ready to go off on the NFL when I heard that they weren't going to let the Browns and the Titans participate because they were on their bye week last week. Did you see that?
What?
They weren't going to let those two teams participate because they just happened to be on their bye week. But fortunately, they changed their mind.
Okay.
But the thing about allowing athletes to customize their cleats, you know, this is one of those things where if you have one bad egg, you know, one guy who ruins it for everyone and they just call off the whole idea and say they have to go back to the way it was before, you know, and Doriel Green Beckham was that guy who is potentially going to ruin it for everybody.
Of course he is.
Yeah. And apparently he thinks it's OK to just make up a foundation so he can wear Yeezy cleats. You know, the Kanye West line of shoes. They have cleats.
Oh, I didn't realize he had a line of shoes. So he has a line of shoes.
He has a line of shoes.
Yeezys?
Yeah. And so Doriel Green Beckham used he put down that he was raising money for the Yeezy Foundation. There's so many great causes out there. You couldn't find a single real one to support. You don't have a family member or friend impacted by a health issue. You don't have kids in your hometown or somewhere in the country you feel need help. You really think that wearing a pair of Kanye West cleats is more important than any of those other things? As I said, this is the kind of thing that ruins a good thing for everyone. Doriel Green Beckham needs to find a real foundation and he needs to do better.
I agree. What a selfish turd. I mean, come on, man. Like, I don't. And not only that, but to celebrate Kanye West of all things, like, you know,
you might like whatever. His music.
I mean, everybody's got their interests, I suppose. But yeah. Geez Louise, that doesn't seem cool at
all. I think Kanye West is doing all right. Yeah, I don't think he needs Doriel Green Beckham's help.
No. Well, he's not doing all right. He's in the hospital thinking everybody's out to get him.
Oh, I hadn't heard that.
Yeah.
Maybe he's not doing all right.
He's breaking down a little bit, man. Like things have gone a little sideways for him.
Well, financially, I from what I understand, he's doing all right.
Yeah, I think they're just fine that way. All right, Brandon, my do better this week is for a dude who really, I'm glad that he got put in jail over this because this is really about as sleazeball as it gets in a lot of ways. There was a man in Green Bay and they don't release his name, so I can't name him by name. And I wish I could. But is there a man, he's from a little town called Slinger, which is about an hour outside of Green Bay. And basically, This guy went to the game, and as he was at the game, proceeded to get hammered and then lost his friends and didn't have a ride back to his house. So this guy calls up a cab and gets a cab to take him an hour away from the stadium to back to his hometown. Well, as you might imagine, that's a little spendy. That costs a few bucks. The bill comes to $475.60.
What?
Yeah. So, drunk dude gets out of the cab and says, oh, no, I'll be right back. I'm going to hit the ATM here so I can pay you. And while inside, slips out the back door, stiffing the cabbie. So, the cabbie calls the police and is like, man, I just $500 fare this guy basically has skipped out on. Like, what's going to happen here? Like, can you help a brother out? Police say, sure. They go out and they look for him. So this guy gets back to his hometown. Does he go home? No. They find him at the bar, some local bar, drinking even more, you know, spending money that he doesn't have because he can't even pay the cabbie. He got a free ride to jail after that. So for a dude who's stiffing cabbies for like bailing his ass out because he got too drunk and lost his friends, do better.
I don't know, $500 cab ride though.
Well, you should know better. If you're going to call a cab to drive an hour, you think that's going to be cheap?
I can drive from here to Seattle and back for less than $500.
I understand that. But to hire somebody to drive you that distance is a very different affair. It really is. What are cabs used for? Cabs are for getting around town.
I'm pretty sure I can hire an airplane pilot to fly me from here to Seattle for less than $500.
Right. That's why this guy's making poor decisions, though. Like, there's not a train. He couldn't hitchhike. You know, he couldn't. How do you lose your friends? Give them a call. Everybody's got cell phones. You mean they're all off of their Twitter? I mean, come on, man.
That's one of your bigger reaches at Do Better, Adam.
Like, why is it a reach? Just because you don't like what the cab charges? It is what it is.
I just can't get over this.
Well, it costs $20 to get across town. Like, what, do you think it's going to be, you know, less than $50 to drive to, you know, an hour away?
Depends on how far the hour is.
It's an hour. They charge by the time, dude. They don't charge by the mile.
When I lived in D.C., it took me an hour and a half just to get home, and that was like 30 miles.
Right. That's why you don't live in D.C.
That'd be an expensive round trip, though. That'd be $1,000 a day to get to work.
Well, that's why you don't take a
catfish
cab.
All right, let's get on to Better Life.
All right, man. Well, I'll hit you with my Better Life. This might be even more of a reach this week. I struggled at this these two segments today. But my Better Life than Skip Bayless this week is for Santa Mike. And none of you know who Santa Mike is, but let me bring Santa Mike to your attention. As most of you know, I was listening, I'm having to do the pictures of Santa Claus in the Kalispell Center Mall. And part of that experience is hiring Santa. Like, you have to find a dude to play Santa. And let's just say, over the years when I've done this in the past, it's been a little bit of a crapshoot. Finding a 60-odd-year-old man with a big, fluffy gray or white beard, because they have to be a real bearded Santa. That's in the contract. You got to do that. With nothing but time, but still needs money, tends to not bring out the, let's say, best among us. And so it's been a struggle over the years. Like, one year I had Jägermeister Santa. Definitely, I mean, you've seen Bad Santa. This is true. These things happened. A Jägermeister Santa, who figured that the kids couldn't tell because it smelled like licorice. We had Cokehead Santa one year. That was real fun. And then we had Weed Santa. So there's been, I've had some tough Santa experiences, but Santa Mike not only looks exactly the part, like, I don't know how many people have come up to the booth and been like, dude, that's freaking Santa right there, you know, but he is the kindest, nicest, gentlest soul who speaks so nice to the kids, and he shows up on time. And he's not screwed up, you know, he's not high, he's not drunk, you know, he's a real nice guy. And, you know, instead of being a diva Santa that takes like an hour for lunch and then doesn't show up like for hour and 15, hour and 20 while people are waiting in line, like a 20 minute lunch is a little too long for him. He gets bored. He doesn't bitch about the chair, you know, that he sits in. Santa Mike has made my life so much better, and I love him. I love him so much. Santa Mike, you are better at life than Skip Bayless.
What if you did get the real Santa?
Dude, he could be real Santa.
That's what I'm saying.
I'm dead serious,
man. Can you ask him for a Super Bowl?
Not yet. But Santa Mike is definitely killing it. Yeah, if you live in the greater Kalispell area and you've got kids and you want to do Santa pictures, dude, that's easily the best experience. Like, right there. He is top notch.
Good to know. I'll be there.
Okay.
My Better Life this week is for Steven Hausch Money.
Ooh, okay.
I don't think we've had him in this spot in nearly as regularly as we should.
This hasn't been his best season.
Well, extra points have been a struggle for everybody. Let's just say that.
Oh, okay.
But one thing that Steve Hauschka does not struggle with, and that's ping pong, Adam.
What?
And this last week, he had his second annual celebrity ping pong tournament fundraiser for Mary's Place and the No Child Sleeps Outside group.
Oh, and okay.
Hausch Money took it to the house. He won his own ping pong tournament, crushed everybody. I want to have something that I'm so good at that I can invite to play, like just invite random people to play me at and then just destroy them. I want to be Stephen Hauschka.
I get it, man. If you hadn't have given up on curling with me, that could have been it.
That
could have been our thing. Yeah,
that's true. We could, and then we could have had a Seahawkers podcast annual foundation fundraiser for curling, and we could just dominate everybody.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, kinda maybe like it's not too late.
Kind of like I did Spring League 2 years ago.
Yeah,
I was a champion. Yeah.
Well, maybe it's not too late, but for Hausch money, raising money for great causes, and everybody involved, you know, helped out, and they got to get smoked by Steve Money Hauschka, who is better at life than Skip Bayless.
How is it that kickers are always like randomly awesome at a couple other sports? Generally, it's golf.
Yeah.
Like that's the one. But I could see how ping pong falls into that wheelhouse, too. I get it.
And then you have our punter, who's an American Ninja Warrior. Like just.
Right.
Yeah. It's always something strange or unusual.
Well, that's probably because to become a kicker, you need to be a little strange or unusual.
You have to have
Nobody is like in the third grade being like, God, I can't wait to be the starting kicker for the Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah, if you like to kick things, usually you play soccer.
Right, right. Yeah, because your dream is you're going to be the starting quarterback. Right. You know what I mean? You're going to be dropping dimes. You're not dreaming of game winner field goals, you know?
Not usually.
No.
Or a long snapper. Like, that's not something you would necessarily dream of because...
I did.
I know you.
I dreamed. I did. I still have a dream. I have a dream. And that's to be a long snapper in the league someday.
No, maybe you can be an Olympic curler instead.
It's my last shot to be an Olympian, dude. Like, there's no other sport, quote unquote, that I think I could make that happen at. I'm too much of a regular guy who just trying hard. Like, that's all I am. I'm no athlete. All right, Brandon, with my Olympic curling dreams put on hold, I think it's probably time to get out of here. We've talked about a lot of random stuff today, but a win, and we all know it's better to win than it is to lose. On to Green Bay. I think we can expect a little bit of the same as far as the winning is concerned. And
I hope so. Prove the team needs to prove me wrong on this idea about a Holmgren / Hasselbeck curse.
Yeah, I'm still not buying it, so they'll do that. It's gonna be an interesting game. Up in the snow, I think with the running game, it definitely helps. But I think with all of that, Brandon,
there's only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks!
Go Hawks! Thanks for tuning in to this week's show. As we mentioned, if you want to help support the show, you can go to getintheflock.com. But there's other ways to support the show, too. You can go to seahawkerspodcast.com/support. If you're going to a away game and want tickets, you can go there. There's plenty of other things. Or if you're looking for that next Seahawks jersey, go to Fanatics and you can click on our link at seahawkerspodcast.com/support. Get your gear through there and a little percentage kicks back to the show.
You bet, man. That's... Again, you're doing it anyways, so hook a brother up. I don't know, that's too much to ask.
SeahawkersPodcast.com/support. Thanks again for supporting the show.